to Saturday morning out to you. I hope you're doing great this Saturday morning. This is Real Life Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. Good morning, Beth. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning. Happy start of the month of March.
Yes. We heard last week that you were sad that February was ending.
I know, but now I'm all excited about March. March is like spring is
springtime.
Coming and spring break and St. Patrick's Day. I mean,
you seem to move on quickly. I mean, it's like I'm sad February's ending. Oh, it's the month of love, and all of a sudden March 2nd is just like, hey, all right, March 2nd.
I'm a girl.
Let's move on.
In the moment. I am a girl that lives in the moment.
Hey, are you like that? I mean, are you pretty good at just sort of, you know, burying the hatchet, moving on? Is there anything that just gets you that you just can't let go, or what?
That's a good question. I have an easy time burying the hatchet and letting go. I have a hard time with transition sometimes. So, frankly, moving from one month to another is not that big of a deal. But like when I was a college student, you know, a couple years ago, I used to feel really sad about leaving in August my childhood home to go away to college and be all sad, even, you know, sophomore, junior, senior year. And then it would be May and it would be time to move home. And I'd be so sad about moving the house where all my girls lived. You know, I had so much fun in that house. And I'd be like, oh, I don't want to leave. You know, so kind of wherever I am, I want to stay. It's a bit of the day of the mind of Beth Guckenberger.
There you go. And you want to get out of there quickly, because if you get way too far in there, it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland. You may not get out.
Hey, happy anniversary, sir.
Happy anniversary is right. What anniversary are we celebrating today?
So this is our one-year anniversary of Real Life.
One year on the air.
Remember a year
That's kind of crazy. I'm surprised they haven't kicked us off.
We were in the studio, and then all of a sudden the music started, and they're like, you are going 2 minutes. And you and I looked at each other like, are you kidding me? You're not going to
What are we doing here?
Where are the classes? Who's going to instruct us? Oh, yeah.
Obviously, there's been no classes, no instruction. No. We're just kind of winging it on our own. Hopefully, it's getting better.
I hope so, too. I loved those guests, though. We should have Marianne and Dennis Bosiger back on. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
Really kind to us first guests. That helped.
Absolutely.
Talked vulnerably about their own marriage. And, I remember thinking, oh, if it's all this easy, this is going to be a piece of cake.
Right. Most of them have been pretty easy.
Yeah. I mean,
it's been a good thing.
But I think absolutely, I would do it all over again. How about you?
That's absolutely. And you know, I think about some things. I'm kind of a measurement guy. I like to know if anybody's actually listening. I like to know, you know, are we just talking to ourselves? Almost 600,000 downloads in a year off BethGuckenberger.com of our show. So that's pretty impressive, 600,000. I know that in December we did a show on child sponsorship for back-to-back, and within a week there were, 40-something new child sponsors, 40-something new children who had people loving them and praying for them that didn't happen before. So those are fun things to know that somebody must be listening.
Not me. I would wake up on Saturday morning just to have an interesting conversation with you, just so you know. The rest of you all are just gravy.
That's right. They just get to listen in.
They're all just gravy. Okay, speaking of gravy, today we have just gravy. A really interesting guest on.
Yes.
I put him out on social media that I was going to be interviewing today, Rabbi Jonathan Cahn, the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger. And I mean, he is a controversial figure. And so I think today's show is going to be very interesting.
It is. And there might be some people who don't know about Rabbi Cahn. I mean, it's hard to believe because he's been all over the place. He's been on every television show that matters, and he's written this New York Times bestseller. He's got a follow-up book. He's got DVDs, all that kind of stuff. But for those who don't know him, this is going to be your shot to be introduced to his thoughts about the Harbinger and prophecy and how it applies to the United States. And you know, it's an interesting conversation. So
interesting conversations.
That's right.
Somebody told me they used a phrase that I use all the time. Someone told me that they had a little mind crush on him, that they'd seen him on a cable television show, and that they walked away from that show fascinated with his mind. And I said to them, I totally know. I have a mind crush of my own. It's this man who teaches biblical history from a Jewish perspective named Ray Vanderlaan. I mean, he mm-hmm. could pretty much tell me this guy is green, and I'd start telling everybody this guy is green. I mean, I just think if he said it first, I'm sure it's right. You have anybody like that in your life? You got a mind crush on anybody?
I have a mind crush on?
Mm-hmm. Anybody who likes you just want to read everything they write.
That's a pretty intimate question.
Well,
but yes, I do have one.
I just told everybody who my mind crush is.
That's right. And because I'm a heathen, because I'm not as spiritual as everybody else, mine is Malcolm Gladwell.
I have a
mind crush on Malcolm Gladwell. I think he's just, I could read everything that I read, every article, I read every book, I reread them. He's one of the, this will sound, gosh, this is going to sound really arrogant. I don't mean it to, but, you know, I read a lot of stuff. And
yeah.
At some point when I'm reading it, I'll be like, you know, given enough time and interest, I probably could have figured that out.
Uh-huh.
Right? I'll read this stuff.
You are
I read
Dr.
Malcolm.
Let's remind our listeners.
I read Malcolm Gladwell, and I'm like, I never would have thought of that in a million years.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting. It's and I'm like, and how he ties stuff together, I'm like, wow. He's a great storyteller. I mean, I wish he'd come on the show, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Hey, we don't know that. We'll have
yeah, I don't know. I'll ask him. I don't know why he'd want to be on Christian radio, but
I
you
think
know.
That you would think to yourself, I don't know what to ask him, and I'd have to carry you the whole entire time.
I would be stunned into silence.
Like the freshman boy at his first time coming, looking at all those cute senior girls. Like I don't know quite what to say right now.
I'm just gonna stand in the corner and try not to do anything stupid.
Okay. Well, we'll see if we can do that because I actually think that might be kind of fun to watch.
Okay.
Oh, I was just thinking, I'm headed to Colorado this week for something for work. And when I go to Colorado, first of all, they have like 300 days of sunshine. So I already like the state right off the bat.
I didn't know that. 300 days of sunshine, that's like the opposite of Seattle.
It's the sunniest, second to only Florida, sunniest country or state in our entire continental United States. And one thing about Colorado is like when you go into an office building, which is what I'm going to be doing, there'll be a bike rack out front and it will be literally full of bikes. People who have biked themselves to work, you know, they're mm-hmm. eating their granola in their backpack on their way there. And they, you know,
yeah.
they got like, and they're not definitely not drinking bottled water. They're drinking water out of a bottle that's saving the environment. Like they're just all healthy and environmentally conscious. And I was thinking to myself, it might be good timing for me to kind of revisit my New Year's resolutions in the health department.
February. Okay, we're into March.
This is a good, like, was that a phase? Or are you genuinely going to take seriously some of these, you know? Like, you go, I'm not kidding you, you go over there, and they're like every single menu, you know, like, you can go to some menus in the Midwest, and they might have, like, the calorie count off to the side, which is really helpful.
Right,
there
right.
they have, like, all nutritional information about every item on the menu. It's just a little fascinating state I'd like to give a shout-out to. How are you doing on your news resolutions? Are you?
If you recall, I didn't make any.
Oh, I thought. Oh, you're right. You know what? I made some for you, and I don't think you're doing great on them.
Well, then they're not mine. I mean, again, I think we had this conversation in January that I already have a wife that gives me things to do, and so for you to give me a list of what my New Year's resolution should be, that just isn't right.
It doesn't make sense to you. It makes all kinds of sense to me.
Well, I'm sure it does.
Okay, well, I'll let you know when I get back next week exactly how I did on my little check up there.
All right, and then maybe our listeners can check in at some point about or talk to one another about how they're doing on their New Year's resolutions. That'd be a good conversation today, I guess.
I mean, I think so. It's the start of spring. It's kind of got its own little new beginning swing to it, the beginning
That's
of
right.
the
second They can talk
quarter.
About that. Mm-hmm. They can talk about that. They can talk about a mind crush they might have had. They can talk about, I mean, look, we've only been on the air less than like 10 minutes, and we've already given our listeners plenty of banter.
Starters. That's,
right. There should be no reason that this weekend that they can't start a conversation if there's some dead air or somebody they don't know. Bang! New Year's resolutions, mind crushes on people. I mean,
have you ever
what
heard
else?
Of Rabbi
I mean,
Jonathan Kahn? I mean,
that's
already
right.
you're
that's
sounding.
Right.
Fantastic.
That's exactly right. And he's going to be with us right after the break. He's going to be here in just a minute. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, who is the author of the New York Times bestseller, The Harbinger. And it's going to be an interesting conversation. I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing sort of the background and all of those things about how the book came to be. So join us right after the break. This is Real Life, Real Talk. And we'll see you in just about 60 seconds.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Ibram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
Welcome back. This is Real Life, Real Talk. Happy Saturday morning to you wherever you might be out there. We hope you're having a great Saturday. Good morning, Beth. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing great. It's nice and warm out here in Mexico, and it's the beginning of a warm Saturday, so I'm doing pretty well out here. Thanks.
Hey, I have been looking forward to this show. I knew that Rabbi Jonathan Kahn was going to be on our show. It's been, I don't know, a few weeks, and you know, this is going to be an intriguing, interesting conversation, perhaps a wake-up call for a lot of our listeners. Rabbi Kahn is, as I mentioned, the author of a best-selling book, The Harbinger, New York Times best-selling book. And it's first, I mean, this is kind of amazing stuff. The first week of its release, it was number one on numerous Christian charts, religious and secular charts. Sold over a million copies. He's now got a new book just come out to go deeper called The Harbinger Companion. It's hard to imagine that our listeners have not at some point come across Rabbi Kahn, but if they haven't today, they are going to be introduced to him, and so I'm looking forward to that. Rabbi Kahn, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great to be here. Great to be with you.
Well, thank you so much. As I mentioned, it's hard to imagine that our listeners haven't at least had some conversation about the book or about the ideas in the book, but perhaps for those that haven't, heard of it. What is the mystery of the Harbinger, and what in the world does it have to do with Isaiah 9:10?
Yeah, the Harbinger is the revealing of an ancient mystery in the Bible that lies behind everything from 9/11 to the collapse of the American economy. So specific that it speaks of the actions of American leaders before they take them, and it gives the words, the exact words before they've spoken them. It gives exact dates of some of the most important events in the last 10 years in American history down to the hours. And it goes back to ancient Israel in the last days of Israel, a nation that had known God but had turned away from God, and there were warnings given to that nation, warning it of judgment and ultimately destruction. And there are nine harbingers or nine prophetic signs that appeared in the land before the destruction of Israel, and they ignored them or they defied them. And the eerie thing or the scary thing or the stunning thing is that the same nine harbingers that appeared then before the destruction are now reappearing to America and reappearing on American soil. Some have appeared in New York City. Some have appeared in Washington, D.C. Some have involved American leaders, even the highest leaders of the land. And the ultimate revelation or question is that, is God sending a warning, to a very specific, precise warning to America, a warning that America is now the nation that is in danger of judgment?
And so give me an example of, for the skeptic listening or someone who's not sure exactly.
Yeah, like, sure.
Give me an example of one of them that will feel compelling.
Sure. To set the stage is, and as you said before, Isaiah 9:10, to know that is to decode the harbingers. And basically, this is what happens. When the first warning comes to ancient Israel, and that it comes in the form of a strike on the land, it comes in the form of an enemy attack that is allowed. The nation's hedge protection is temporarily lifted. So it's a shaking. It's a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. And it's to call the nation back. And what happens is that Israel, instead of coming back to God, they do the opposite. They defy him, and they make a vow. And the vow is recorded by the prophet Isaiah. That's Isaiah 9:10, again, which is the center or the decoder, in a sense, of the harbingers. Mm-hmm. And what they say is this. They say, the bricks have fallen in this attack, but we will rebuild with hewed stone. The sycamores have been cut down in the attack, but we will plant cedars in their place. And what they're saying is this: God, you're not going to humble us. We're not going to be turned back to you. We're going to come back against you. We're going to continue in our course, driving you out of our lives, driving you out of our government, driving you, continually defying you, and we're going to do it more strongly than ever before. And that's what the vow is all about. What does it have to do with America? Well, the first sign of national judgment in the Bible, the first warning, is that years before the nation's judgment comes a strike on the land. And it comes in the form of an enemy making a strike. The nation's hedge of protection is lifted temporarily. Well, on September 11, 2001, the hedge of America's protection was lifted. There was a strike. It was temporary. It was a shaking, a wake-up call. And for a time, it looked like there was going to be revival. I mean, it looked like people were flocking to churches and coming. But that lasted about 3 weeks because there was no repentance. There was no turn. Without a turn to God, there's no repentance. And so from that, from 9/11 is the beginning. And from 9/11 come these nine harbingers. I can quickly mention just a few as it goes in order.
That'd be great.
Yeah, one of it, for instance, and it goes right down the vow, you know, because the vow says, for you know, the bricks have fallen, we will rebuild with hewn stone. Well, in Hebrew, the word for that is gazit stone. It means a quarried stone out of a mountain rock. And so the people of Israel go to the mountains of Israel. They quarry out this massive block. The gazit stone was a massive rectangular block of stone. They bring it back to the ground of destruction where the attack happened. And they said, we're going to rebuild now stronger than ever. This is the stronger material. We're coming back. We're going to build higher, bigger, stronger. And this becomes their vow, of their object of defiance, this gazit stone. Well, after 9/11, the people of New York go up to the mountains of New York. They quarry out a stone. It's a biblical gazit stone. It's a massive rectangular block of 20 tons of stone. They bring it to New York City. They bring it to Ground Zero, where the destruction happened. They put it on the pavement. They lower it on the pavement of Ground Zero. They have a ceremony around the stone. They have the leaders of New York and New Jersey, the governors, the mayors, around the stone, and they all pronounce vows of defiance over the stone, saying we're coming back stronger and bigger and better. Mm. And you know, it's interesting because you look at the ancient commentaries, and when they speak about what Israel did, they use this phrase. They call it this was done in the spirit of defiance. Well, when the governor of New York says we're laying the stone, he literally says we're doing it in the spirit of defiance. And they're reenacting this ancient mystery without, and nobody knows what they're doing. They're not planning this. It goes down the line in Isaiah. It says the next thing, the sixth harbinger in the book is the sycamore, the sign of the sycamore. It says the sycamores have been struck down. Well, that's a biblical sign of national judgment in the Bible, the striking down of the tree and particularly the sycamore. And so for the sixth harbinger to manifest, it would have to be that somehow the sycamore would have to be struck down, have to be linked to 9/11. Well, in the last moments of 9/11, something happens. As the tower is coming down, it sends forth a shockwave and a beam into the air. And that beam strikes an object. The object is a tree. The tree is the sycamore. The sycamore is struck down right there at the corner of Ground Zero. It's the biblical sign in the Bible of national judgment. The people of New York make the sycamore into a symbol. They put it on display. They call it the sycamore of Ground Zero. They have no idea what they're doing. And it goes down. The next thing Isaiah says is, it says, the sycamores have fallen, but we will plant cedars in their place. Well, this is the seventh harbinger in the book, and it's called, in Hebrew, they didn't say cedar. It's English. They said Erez. Mm-hmm. An Erez tree can be a cedar, but it can also be a spruce. It basically refers to an evergreen pine. It's called a conifer or panacea tree, and it's a technical term. Well, what they're doing is this: they're doing another act of defiance. Israel's saying, we're going to come back stronger. So right where the sycamore fell, we're going to plant a stronger tree, this Erez tree, and it's going to be a sign that we're coming back as a nation stronger than ever without God. Well, what happens? Mm-hmm. 2 years after 9/11, a tree appears in the sky at the corner of Ground Zero. zero. It's being lowered into the ground to go into the exact spot where the sycamore had stood. They plant it in the same place as Israel did. They have a ceremony around the tree. They call it the Tree of Hope. They, you know, it's a sign of coming back stronger than ever. And the tree, what kind of tree was it? It was not a sycamore. It was a biblical Erez tree, the same tree of Isaiah 9:10. And it gets even more, you know, exact and, if you will, eerie. Because what happens is one of the signs, and this is the eighth harbinger in the book, is that in the actual vow itself, that the leaders of ancient Israel actually vowed this vow, that itself was a sign that they give this vow of judgment and that pronounces judgment on the nation. It actually leads to their destruction. And they would have done it in the capital city. So for this harbinger to appear, and this is very unlike, I mean, this is, you know, what American leader would have to actually pronounce this vow, which brings judgment on a land, this vow of defiance, but what American leader in the right mind is going to do that? Well, on the anniversary of 9/11, it also has to be linked to the attack, 9/11. On the anniversary of 9/11, a national leader gets up in the capital city. It's John Edwards, and he's going to speak about 9/11. And he gets up, and the first words that come out of his mouth, he says, "We have this word." And the word that comes out of his mouth is, he says, he pronounces the ancient vow of judgment. He says, the bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with hewn stone. The sycamore is cast down. We will plant seed. He does the whole thing. And not only that, he builds his entire speech around Isaiah 9:10. He has no idea what he's saying. And this is a vow of judgment concern, which identifies a nation in defiance and rebellion against God that is in the stages of judgment. And he speaks of the harbingers in there. He doesn't know what he's saying out of 30,000 verses. He does it in the capital city. And on the very day after 9/11, and this is the ninth harbinger, the very day after 9/11, and people didn't realize this happened, America actually gave a response to 9/11 on Capitol Hill. And what happened is the entire Congress gathered the next morning on Capitol Hill, and one man was appointed to speak for the nation. So this is very significant, speaking to give the nation's response to this attack. He gets up to this on the podium. It's Tom Daschle. He's the head of the Senate. The Senate it represents the nation of each state. And he gets up on the podium in front of the entire U.S. Congress. He says, at the end of his speech, presenting America's response, he says, "We have a word from Isaiah that speaks to all of us at times like this." And then out of his mouth comes the ancient vow. He says, "The bricks have fallen, but we will rebuild with dressed stone." Then he speaks of the tree that struck down. He doesn't even realize that day there is an actual tree that's just being discovered, the sycamore. He speaks of the stone, the other harbinger, that's got the gazit stone. That's going to happen 3 years after there. He speaks of the replacing of the one tree with the other. He doesn't realize it's prophetic, and it's going to set the course of the nation. And he's going to say at the end, he says, "This is what we, America, are going to do." In other words, we're going to follow the course of ancient Israel, which is a course of judgment. It's ominous, and it's going to lead to the second shaking. So just a note here is that, you know, we just touched on some of the harbingers, but that's the beginning. It's not the end, because it's going to set the stage for the next shaking of America, which is continuing to this day.
Yeah, it made me even think about it. I mean, so this is a continuing idea. It started then, but explain that. It's the beginning of something. The revelation of the harbinger continues to bring it up. We've only got 90 seconds before the break, so give us at least a tease on that, and we'll come back after the break and continue the conversation.
Okay, yeah. The pattern of the harbinger reveals the future, and that is that if the nation does not heed the first shaking or the first warning, then there's going to come another shaking. The second shaking of America isn't something that involves buildings. It is the very shaking of American global power itself. It's the collapse of the American economy. We're still living in the shadow of this. And that happens a number of years after 9/11. And behind that is a whole stream of biblical mysteries that even give the exact dates of when this happened, the exact hours of when it happens. And it's eerie, but it's amazing. I mean, we can share it in the next segment, but it's exact. It's so exact, I mean, that it's really mind-boggling. And we are still living in the shadow of it. And in fact, even since the Harbinger was published, what is in there is coming true.
if that doesn't make you want to come back and listen after the break, I don't know what else will. We're talking with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn about his book, best-selling book, The Harbinger, and just some compelling, interesting, intriguing stuff. And so, Beth, we'll be back after the break, and we'll talk some more about that right after this.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care, assists senior citizens and adults to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Visiting Angels has over 400 franchised locations across the nation. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours a day. Rates are affordable, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. Visiting Angels has cared for hundreds of thousands of seniors nationwide. Franchises are available. Call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE. To find an office near you, visit www.visitingangels.com. For home care for your loved ones, call Visiting Angels now at 877-374-LIVE. That's Visiting Angels, America's choice in home care at 877-374-LIVE.
He found shelter under the rock and lay there looking at the stars. God, do you remember me? In Tales of the Not Forgotten by Beth Guckenberger, Joel dares to ask for what he can't have. Serafina sacrifices what she can't afford to give. Abram looks for an answer buried out of reach, and Christina, saved by a mission, searches for her own. Follow these life-changing stories as they take you on a journey to faraway lands and unfamiliar faces. Travel through their challenges and see the hand of the great story weaver writing endings you'd never imagine. These are the tales of the ones the world doesn't see, tales of the not forgotten. In Tales of the Not Forgotten, learn how God is the great story weaver, weaving the threads of our lives into a strong and beautiful sign of His love. Check out Tales of the Not Forgotten book and missions materials by Beth Guckenberger. For more information or to purchase, go to your local Christian supplier or visit standardpub.com. See lives transformed.
If becoming or staying debt-free is important to you, you're not alone. 10 years ago, I was worried sick, overwhelmed with debt, and so tired of not having enough at the end of the month to make ends meet. I was working a full-time job, but getting deeper in debt every month, and I hated being away from my children. I finally said, that's enough, and I made a decision to do whatever it took to get free from the terrible debt that was causing me so much stress. I'm Gina Neef, and I want to invite you to find the same financial freedom that I found. Not only did I pay my way out of debt, I was also able to leave my corporate job and work from home and be completely available to my family. For years now, I've worked part-time hours, making more than a full-time job would ever pay. I remember the pain of being in over my head, and I'll never forget the joy of becoming debt-free. That's why I show others how to do the same. If you're ready to work from home and find financial freedom, then I'm eager to show you how. Go to findingfreedomnow.com. Discover how you can get free from debt. Go to findingfreedomnow.com.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall along with Beth Guckenberger. We're talking with, just having this great conversation, intriguing, interesting conversation with Rabbi Jonathan Kahn, the author of the national bestseller, The Harbinger, The Ancient Mystery Behind America's Future. I'd also like to add, Jonathan leads the Jerusalem Center Beth Israel in Wayne, New Jersey. He's also the president of Hope of the World and International Outreach. I hope that perhaps towards the end of this segment, or if he's willing to stay the next segment, we could talk a little bit about that as well. Some great work going on there. So, Beth, welcome back. Dr. Rabbi Kahn, welcome back. Glad to have you with us.
Great to be here.
I was hoping you would be able to pick up kind of right where we left off before the break. I mean,
Sure. If
we are to believe these signs, and you say there are more signs that are currently today unfolding, will you walk us through those so we can kind of understand how to put this economic collapse we've all experienced in a context that's biblical and a story that's old?
Sure. Yeah. One of the things in the shaking of a nation, the warning of a nation, and again, the point of this, in the Bible, is God is trying to bring a nation back to Him that is becoming increasingly deafened to Him. So that's why it gets more and more, severe. And one of the things is to get our attention is our power. And this is, America has been the global economic power of this past century. And there, with a second shaking here now, and this is the collapse of the American economy. There are a whole stream of incredibly biblical mysteries in the Harbinger. One of them is called the Buttonwood Mystery, which goes back to the foundation of America's rise to power. Another one, the mystery of three witnesses, that in the matters of judgment, there are two or three witnesses confirming it. And so with America, there were actually three American leaders who all pronounced this judgment or pronounced this ancient mystery here. And the last, the third one is the President of the United States. But one of them I'll focus on here now is called the Mystery of the Shemitah. And what that is that every 7 years in Israel, there was a Sabbath year. And this goes back to Moses in Sinai. And what happened is that they would rest, and there was no buying, sowing, selling, reaping of the land and all that. And on the last day of this Sabbath year, it was called the Shemitah. The last day, there was basically an economic kind of wiping out. And what happened is all credit was wiped away, all debt was wiped away. The nation's financial accounts were wiped clean, in a sense. And this whole thing, this all happened on this one day that was called in Hebrew Elul 29. The 29th day of Elul, the one that came around once every 7 years, would be this wiping away of the nation's financial realm. Now, it was to be a blessing because, wiping away debt is a blessing. But the thing is that when the nation turned away from God, when Israel turned against Him, what happened is that this thing, the Shemitah, the Sabbath year, it comes back at them, but not as a blessing, but as a sign of judgment. It's actually the key to the timing of their judgment when they went into Babylon for 70 years. Well, what does it have to do with America? Well, here's the sign that has to do with a nation that is driving God out of its life, that has put money and other things ahead of God, that specifically strikes the nation's financial realm. Well, here it is, the Shemitah as a sign. The key is the seven-year cycle. It happens once in 7 years. Well, between the two shakings, we spoke about 9/11, that's 2001. The second shaking comes in the financial collapse comes in 2008. That's 7 years, a seven-year cycle. When does it happen? It happens in 2008 in the month of September. That's 7 years to the month of 9/11. When exactly? It happens in the second week of September. That's 7 years to the week of 9/11. In fact, it was the week that America was commemorating 9/11 that this economic collapse happened. In fact, on the very day that America was commemorating the seventh anniversary of 9/11, the second shaking was set in motion on Wall Street. And again, that's incredibly mind-boggling exact, because what was the greatest day of this of the collapse of the economy? It happened at the end of September. It was the greatest stock market crash in the history of America. And when did that take place? The greatest collapse in American history took place on the day called Elul 29, the biblical day of the Shemitah, the day of the wiping away of financial accounts, the day of wiping away of credit and debt, the day that is appointed as a sign on a nation that has driven God out of its life, the greatest collapse. In fact, that morning, it happened down to the exact hours. That morning on Wall Street, they were ringing the bell to open up, and the bell would not ring. First time it happened, they all took it as an omen. And that day, interesting, because in the Bible, it's linked to the number seven. It's this the seventh year, the whole Shemitah mystery. Well, that day, how much of Wall Street was wiped out? out, 7% was wiped out. How many points exactly? 777 points. And if you go back, 7 years, because it's a 7-year mystery, and you go back from that crash, from that day or from that hours, go back, what you find is you have the month of September 2001, 9/11, but you also have the other greatest crash in American history up to that point. It was the greatest crash up to that point, and that happened on September 17th, 2001. It was actually caused by 9/11. And the thing is, so that seems like 7 years. It's like almost exact. You know, it's almost maybe a week or two apart. But when you go to the Hebrew calendar and you strip away the Western calendar, because the mystery is based on the biblical calendar, the other greatest collapse in American history happened on the exact same biblical Hebrew day of the Shemitah, Elul 29 on the Hebrew calendar, appointed to wipe away a nation's financial accounts, a sign of judgment. The two greatest collapses in American history up to those days each happened on the same exact biblical day. They happened exactly on the day that is appointed to strike the financial realm, and they happened exactly 7 biblical years apart to the day and to the hours. In fact, you know, only one, you know, Elul 29 in 7 years can be the actual one, only one. Well, each of them happened on the one in 7 years that could be the one. So, I mean, this is mind-boggling, because, you know, the only way this could happen is that if every financial transaction in the world was part of this mystery. And in fact, even the, you know, the first one happened, was caused by 9/11. And so the first one, even that has to be part of this mystery or this timing. And one of the mysteries of the Shemitah in the Harbinger is that it's saying basically the word, it's a Hebrew word that means literally to release, but it also can mean to let collapse. And the warning is that that America has been blessed as much as America has followed God, as much as it's been used by God. But if America turns away from God, well, the warning of the Shemitah is that its blessings will collapse, its power, that the American age as we know it will end. And so that is just one of the biblical mysteries that is coming true, you know, in our day. And it goes even, I'll touch on another that is called the mystery ground in the Harbinger. And that is, there's a principle in the Bible that happened with Israel. Israel was dedicated, its future was dedicated to God on the Temple Mount, that when Solomon dedicated the temple and he prayed for the future. And so they have this big dedication on the Temple Mount. That's the dedication ground of Israel. Well, when judgment finally came to Israel, the destruction returned to the ground of the Temple Mount. And the principle is that it was a sign of God saying, return to me, and you've fallen from where you were, and come back, and the covenant was broken. So it's a sign and the principle that when the shaking comes or when the destruction comes, it returns to the nation's ground of dedication, where the nation was consecrated to God. Well, is there a parallel in America? Well, here's the thing. The very first day of America, the American nation as we know it today, it wasn't 1776. That was the beginning of the war and independence. But it was the year 1789 when America for the first time had a president presiding over the government according to the Constitution. It was April 30th, 1789. It was the inauguration of George Washington, the very first inauguration. It happened in the capital city. And on that day, Washington gives a prophetic warning. And he says, we don't have time to go into it, but he says in effect that if America ever turns away from God, its blessings, the blessings of heaven, will be removed from the land. And we're witnessing the beginning of that in our generation. And what happens is he gives this warning, and then the entire government, you know, Washington, the Senate, the House, the first government, walks by foot from the place of the Federal Hall where the nation was where the oath was taken and that warning was given. And then they go to a place to dedicate and to pray and dedicate America's future to God. And so if we can find where they did that, we've got a mystery here. So where was it? Well, it was in the capital city. But the capital city on that first day wasn't Washington. It was New York City. Where? It was Lower Manhattan. Where exactly? They dedicated America to God on a specific spot of earth, the consecration ground, America's dedication ground to God, is Ground Zero.
Amazing.
Destruction returns to the same ground. And on that day, you know, here come, it happens right there. I mean, it's right where they prayed. And the nation is turned back to that ground. It's like a message saying, return, return. And on that day, a shockwave goes forth from ground zero, and it strikes another place. It strikes Federal Hall, the place where Washington gave the warning of what would happen if America ever turns away from God and puts a crack in the foundation.
Yeah. Well, if you're not convinced to buy the book now, I don't know what it'll be. But we're talking with Rabbi Jonathan Cahn. Rabbi, I hope when we come back, we can talk a little bit about Hope of the World, and that we can hear about your work there. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. We'll see you in just a minute.
Last October, I went on a back-to-back mission trip to Nigeria, where I had a chance to meet the boy I sponsored through back-to-back. The moment I met him, it became real that Jeremiah was not just a boy in a picture. He was a boy with dreams, hopes, and a story just like my own kids. At that moment, I saw how back-to-back is changing the lives of orphans around the world. I realized that in the same way I'm here for my children to be part of their stories, I can also be part of Jeremiah's. In the same way that my children can be a brother or sister to each other, they can care for Jeremiah. They can write him letters and share their stories as they grow up. We can help him to receive an education and food to fill his stomach, but more importantly, we can be involved in his life and encourage him to follow his dreams. I learned that sponsoring a child through back-to-back is not just about financial support for an orphan. It is about allowing God to intertwine your story and your heart with a child in need. For more information on sponsoring an orphan like Jeremiah through back-to-back, contact 513-754-0300 or email at childsponsorship@back2back.org.
Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob Hall, along with Beth Kuchenberger. We have been having an intriguing, interesting, convicting conversation, I suppose, convicting conversation with Rabbi Jonathan Cahn about his book, The Harbinger. And as I mentioned before the break, if you're not convinced to go buy the book now, I don't know what you will. It's written as fiction, but I think that's one of the reasons it's been so compelling, Beth. It's really written as fiction. It really draws people into a story. It's not a list of biblical prophecy and how it's come true. It's just an intriguing story. Rabbi, where can people find the book?
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's The Harbinger is everywhere. Basically, it's from Amazon to Walmart to CBD to Barnes & Noble online. You can get it. It's everywhere. And you're right. And just to note that, you know, it's really fact. You know, but I was led to put this in a way that people, as you said, could really because a lot of deep things and heavy things can get it without, I mean, just get drawn in without even trying, that it's very easy to read. So that's why I put it with there's a prophet who's revealing this through these seals. And, you know, so that's what the harbinger is. That's all over. But as you mentioned at the beginning, they've asked, there's been a demand to put something out in a nonfiction form so people can do study and get deeper into it. Mm-hmm. So that just came out. It's called The Harbinger Companion, and that's also available everywhere. But that has, you know, the pictures of the harbingers and the background and the maps and the study guide.
Wow,
and everything.
Great, yeah. Into it.
So that's the other one that's also there.
Great.
I wanted to, just before we let you go, hear a minute or two about the hope of the world. I'm just intrigued about what it is your day job is and all the ways in which you're kind of.
I don't know if it's
out.
A day job. Is yeah. Thanks. Well, I lead. I'm a Jewish believer. You know, I'm a pastor, rabbi, messianic. You know, and we lead a place called the Jerusalem Center or Beth Israel, which is about maybe 20 minutes from New York City, and it's Jew and Gentile people from every background, like United Nations of People, and just has the Jewish flavor of Jesus. And so we're there, and then the outreach ministry is called Hope of the World, which is a ministry which is reaching out with the gospel around the world, and also compassion projects around the world. And it's also basically Jew and Gentile, you know, together, and it's the end time harvest. And so that's there. And the Jerusalem Center is, or if you want to get touch base with us, it's the Hope of the World is basically hopeoftheworld.org or hopeoftheworld.com. It's on the web, and the Jerusalem Center is under that, jerusalemcenter.org or bethisrael.org. And if people want to get deeper into the Harbinger and the full kind of teachings of it, the other website we have is called theharbingerwebsite.com or theharbingerwebsite.org that has the, you know, has the full kind of revelations. But we're there. If, I don't know if your listeners are in, you know, New York or New Jersey, you know, we're there. You know, we'd love to,
great,
to have them.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you so much. If you haven't bought the book, The Harbinger, and as Rabbi Kahn mentioned, if you have read the book and you want to dig deeper, The Harbinger Companion is now out as well, more factual, you know, the nuts and bolts behind the creation of the book. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate the time, and blessings to you as you continue your work.
Thank you, both of you, and you keep up the great work, too. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Okay.
I mean,
wow.
Where do you start, Mr.?
I don't know. I mean, it's almost like I want to hang up. I want to go by the companion and dig in. I mean, I'm like, I don't know whether to buy, you know, buy it all. Like, you know, hey, I'm in. But it's intriguing stuff.
It is intriguing stuff. I hope more than anything, you know, for me, and I pray this for our listeners, that it just makes you want more information. Like, whether or not you end up drawing the same conclusions he does, you find out for yourself, what does the Bible say about the times we're living in now? What does the Bible say about the things that have happened in the past? What is the Bible saying about what is yet to come? Making the Bible the central focus, not anybody else's, you know, interpretation of it. And then anytime we as believers intersect with that holy text, we will gain insight. We will gain discernment. We will be changed. And so I pray more than anything that what it drives us to is to try to get a greater understanding of Old Testament prophecy.
You know, the one thing that we didn't get a chance to talk about, I mean, there's so much in there to talk about, is, you know, Rabbi Kahn's conversation about the idea that the judgment is really to wake us up. It's not to punish us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a way to wake us up. And, you know, I just had this conversation in a small group that I'm involved in. I just had this over the weekend, that everything that God does, woven in it is his grace. He can't help it. And so even when I'm faced with this conversation about maybe there's judgment upon us for not repenting, and it's really to wake us up. It's not punishment in the form of I'm just going to get you, but it's really a chance to cause us to return to him, that he is extending grace to us. We didn't talk a lot about that today, but I have heard in other interviews Dr. or Rabbi Kahn talk about that.
Yeah, and you know, I'm in a Bible study right now, on a Beth Moore Bible study with our staff women, and we're talking about that verse in James that says every good and perfect gift is from above. And the idea that something that is perfect in the original Greek means something that perfects you, and then it's in the present continuous form, so it's something that not only perfects you once, but continues to go on and perfect us. And so,
what form is that?
What'd you say? That's
what
James.
Form is that?
James. Present perfect. Never mind.
Man,
I was
listen to that.
English teacher, but
woo!
Anyway, I'm just saying this, that, you know, for example, chocolate is not a good and perfect gift from above because it's not perfecting me and it doesn't continue to give me what I need on an ongoing basis. But I was telling our Bible study that when my son was born with a disability and then subsequent healing, I recognized that disability was a perfect gift from God because it perfected me in that season. I mean, not to the point of perfection, but it worked on me in that season, and it continues to have an impact in my life. And so, you know, at first glance, we'd say chocolate is a way better gift than a disability. But I think in that same way, these wake-up calls are designed to do that very nature, to perfect something in us and then to continue to speak into our life as time goes on, not as some kind of heavy-handed judgment, but as some kind of motion towards us to become more like Christ. That's just the whole goal.
You're right. That's the whole goal. So I mean, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around. You know, I am not an owner of the Harbinger. I haven't read the book. I saw that he was coming on. I did some background. You know, so I don't even know how to wrap my mind around. And I guess that's really kind of the point of prophetic voices anyway, isn't it? I mean, you kind of have to.
Yeah, think about like the Left Behind series and how it sold more copies than.
Sure.
Absolutely anybody anticipated, because it talked about the things that were yet to come. I mean, a million copies of this book sold. We are clearly a culture hungry to know what's coming up. What is
absolutely.
We want to know what do we need to get prepared for? What do we need to be aware of? What signs? We don't want to be left behind. What does that mean about our culture that we want to know these things?
Yeah, it's also, you know, once our listeners get past the conversations that we introduced to them in the first segment, like how's your New Year's resolution going and, you know, those other things, this is now another conversation. I think a great, deep conversation is, what is our insatiable desire to for someone to tell us what's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do we need to know ahead of time what it is that's going to happen to prepare ourselves? And how does that, sort of in a juxtaposition, that's my big word for the day, how does that compare to the idea that we're just called to love people who are in front of us every single day? I mean, you know, we want to know all these things that are going to happen in the end, but at the same time, it's just like, hey, live in the present, love the people who are in front of you. It seems to be that we're kind of conflicted about those two competing ideas.
And, you know, when we talked last week with Dr. David Ireland about racial reconciliation and having friendships across racial lines, you know, our tendency is like all or nothing. Like, I don't know what to say, so I'm going to say nothing. Or I think it's the same kind of approach we have about end times. I either am like an expert on it and I can, you know, outquote you and tell you every theory, or I just am going to choose to ignore the whole subject and remain, you know, utterly ignorant on what's going to happen and just trust God. And I got to believe there's some kind of middle ground in there where I am responsible as a believer to understand what it is that God has taught me and told me to know. And the interpretation I can leave up to the Lord or to the others. But, I mean, I got a certain sense of responsibility to know what the Scripture says. So I'm going back to that. That's my take home from the day.
Yeah.
Get into the book of Isaiah.
Yeah. Well, it's almost like I need to catch my breath. I mean, that was like, I mean, I'm like, oh.
It's a good thing you have a whole rest of the day to do so, sir.
That's true. Luckily, it's a Saturday, and I can, and hopefully some of our listeners will be able to just catch their breath and go, what do I think about that? And,
yeah.
Whew. So, hey, next week we got a friend of yours on next week.
No, Jed Metafine. I'm excited about having him on. He's the president of the Christian Alliance for Orphans, a former, he used to work in the White House under President Bush's administration, so he's just a fascinating man. He wrote a book, and he's going to talk to us a little bit about what is going on with orphan care globally and what it looks like to take leadership in that area. So, I mean,
One of our favorite topics.
It is one of our favorite topics. Well, I certainly hope that our listeners find the time today to have the kind of conversations of substance that we hope that this show spurs on in them, between them and their loved ones, to talk about what it means, how to put experiences and world events like September 11th in a biblical context, and how to know now today on this March 2nd, how is it that I am to love and live, and how is it that I am to prepare for what it is that God has for us in the future? I mean, I just got to think that's a win. If that is our win from the day, that's our win.
Absolutely. And, you know, I would remind our listeners that this show or any of our shows, you can visit BethGuckenberger.com. So if you want to pass this show on like this, man, I've never heard of Rabbi Kahn before, and this is totally, you want to pass that on, or our previous shows that had to do with racial reconciliation, Dr. Ireland or Peter Everett was on a couple of weeks ago, Destiny Rescue. Even your show a couple of weeks ago, we talked about your new book. There are tons of great things on the website, BethGuckenberger.com. You can go there, download, or share on your Twitter or your Facebook or whatever some great information, some great conversation starters. So go do that if you need to, and we'd love for you to pass on what you're listening to on Real Life, Real Talk.
Oh, and I think that whole idea of the hope of the world and the outreach ministry that goes on from his Messianic Jewish community, I think that's another good example that you and I are always kind of drawn to storylines that bring people together, that reconcile communities, that reconcile families, that reconcile marriages. And here's an example where the Jew and the Gentile co-labor together to the benefit of the whole wide world. And that's our sweet spot.
Absolutely. Well, we hope you have a great Saturday today. We hope you've enjoyed this conversation and that you'll join us next week for a new one. You know, we're going to be talking about orphan care again next week. So have a great Saturday, Beth. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next Saturday.
I'll see you then.
All right. This is Real Life, Real Talk. I'm Rob. That's Beth. Until next week, you have a great Saturday.